Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The latest in the Karen Reed case just threw another wrench into what was already a chaotic legal battle. What started as routine motions, and this hearing quickly turned into a legal mess with Judge Beverly Cannone delaying her ruling and signaling that serious consequences could be on the table for the defense of Karen Reed. The accusations that Reed's legal team failed to disclose financial ties to expert witnesses and may have even scripted testimony. If the judge rules against them, we could be looking at sanctions, limitations on evidence, or even attorney removal. Bob Mata, defense attorney, joining us to discuss all of this and break down what may be ahead for Karen. Let's start with this. Just how bad is it when the judge delays a ruling like this? And are we talking about procedural issues, or is this more like dropping a hammer and removing people at this point?
No, I think you want a judge to take things under advisement. I'm not a big fan of a judge ruling from the bench on really important issues, and ultimately whatever happens with this is it's an important issue. You know, if she is contemplating, which you didn't even have to read through the tea leaves,
no,
because when Robert Alesi was arguing towards the end of his argument and he brought up that Sixth Amendment thing, which he kind of just saved to the end, didn't belabor the point, and you know, he was speaking for an awfully long time, so I couldn't tell if it was something that he decided that he felt that he needed to throw in there just in case she was contemplating removing Jackson or pulling his pro hoc ticket, or if it was something that he felt that he needed to argue fervently, because he didn't make a fervent argument about it, but he certainly raised it. And the biggest takeaway from that, as soon as he says pro hoc and he brings up the Supreme Court case Gonzalez, which talks about removing an attorney of choice because it's a very big deal, Judge Cannone leans in and she says, but was he pro hoc?
Mm-hmm.
When she did that, that was a huge indicator that she's seriously contemplating removing him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, people may not want to hear that, but I've been trying to read judges for a long time, and you can never really do it.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, they give you hints if you're listening,
yeah,
closely, you know. And she very, very much, I think, going into that hearing, wanted to hear what they had to say, and I think ultimately, you know, Alesi kind of threw down his gauntlet. Brendan fired back. And, you know, I mean, you want her to think about it. You don't want her making a rash decision. And she needs to make findings. If she's going to, like, you can't just pull a pro hoc attorney's card for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got to, like, because of the Sixth Amendment.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, you can certainly you know, pull it if there's been candor issues with the court, you know. So she's going to go through, she's going to make specific findings. If she ends up doing it, which I'm sure we're going to get into a little bit more, she'll have given findings as to why she's done it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't just be like, yeah, you're gone. See ya, chump. You know, it's like, yep. It's not that thing. Because there's too many ramifications if she pulls lead counsel's pro hoc. It's a big deal.
So if she does impose sanctions or boots him, what is this going to look like? Do you think it would just be Alan Jackson, or do you think we're talking about more of the team, the whole team starting over from scratch? What do you think could happen here?
No, I don't think she'd pull the whole team. You know, Elise went to great lengths early on in the argument to really make a point of saying that David Yannetti wasn't a party to any of the emails.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Like, when you listen to like the little things that he was saying, you like, as an attorney, I knew why he was doing it. And he was, just as an aside, he was absolutely the right call.
Mm-hmm.
To argue that, you know, like he wasn't part of the team back then. So mm-hmm. like he was the perfect guy to argue it because he had none of the stink on him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And on top of that, he's a phenomenal attorney. I mean, mm-hmm. he's, you know, he's an appellate guy, definitely long-winded. But I appreciate his zealous advocacy. And I mean, the guy covers all his bases. But in terms of the team, I don't think so. I think that the only one that's truly in peril is probably Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that she'd pull Yannetti. Obviously, Elise is not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Little, I think, works with Jackson, but I don't think that she's an issue either. So if you try to contemplate worst case scenario for Karen Reed and she pulls Jackson, my feeling, and this is just a guess, I'm always just guessing,
sure,
you know? But I have a feeling that Jackson's not going to walk quietly into the night. Like,
yeah,
that he's going to fight to get back on. You know, because when I look at it, like if and I don't know if you're going to ask me this flat out, do I think Jackson's going to get pulled? My answer is no.
Uh-huh.
And it's not because I don't think that he made a couple of errors. But those errors, when you're weighing them against somebody's Sixth Amendment right to counsel, they're not just, they don't outweigh that.
Sure.
So when she does that balancing act, and if she's talking to her colleagues that wear robes, you know, I'm sure she's having a lot of discussions behind the scenes with other judges, like, you know, 'cause they all know, like, Jackson would appeal it. He'd file an interlocutory appeal or whatever the course of action is in Massachusetts in terms of getting back on the case, whether it's going to the Indiana or, see, I always go slipping Adelphi.
A lot but in Indiana.
It's a similar circumstance when they pulled those lawyers' cards.
Yeah.
They skipped the interlocutory appeal portion and they went directly to the Indiana Supreme Court over there with mm-hmm. what they call an original action, which was filed as part of a writ of mandamus. So I don't know what the course is, course of action, but whatever it is, I have a feeling that Alan Jackson would be taking it for two reasons. He wants to see this thing through all the way to the end, and two, to repair his reputation.
Yeah, you know? I mean, this, how damaging could this be if he is kicked off of this by the judge? And like you said, he'll probably do all of those things, but I mean, could he be facing, you know, some serious consequences from the bar on any of this?
I mean, so the disciplinary committees, I mean, are certainly going to be aware of it. He's certainly going to probably have to answer a complaint from, you know, because it's like some things just trigger the disciplinary mm-hmm. committee immediately.
Yeah.
So, and it's interesting because when you have the Massachusetts disciplinary committee, but you also have the California disciplinary committee that you have to deal with. Allison had to deal with that when she was removed from her pro hoc
mm-hmm.
in the case in Omaha, Nebraska, when we were representing Anthony Garcia, which to this day, we just were zealously representing our client, a guy that they were trying in the press for 3.5 years. So, but they wanted her out.
Mm-hmm.
She was a pit bull. But, you know, she had to deal with first the Nebraska, their disciplinary committee. And then mm-hmm. years later, Illinois came back and said, oh, well, what about this thing in Nebraska? So, I mean, if she makes findings, which she's going to have to. I mean, he might have to answer a few questions either way,
mm-hmm.
whether she keeps him on or whether, you know, she boots him. You know, I mean, that's what the purpose of disciplinary committees are. If they hear about, especially issues of candor, if she because that entire argument about like the thing that Judge Cannone seemed to take the most issue with in terms of Jackson was that sidebar.
Yeah,
I think it was on February 6th where, you know, he flat out told her what he told her. Mm-hmm. And then they tried to delineate, like where he said, we have no more discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he tried to give a brief explanation of it, saying, look, I like all I was thinking about in that moment of time, because it was the topic of discussion, was the federal discovery.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're asking me, do I have anything else? I'm the answer was pertaining only to that,
mm-hmm.
not globally. Because we had not received the certificate of compliance from the Commonwealth in terms of them being done with their discovery, which triggers our requirement to get us or to get them our discovery,
mm-hmm.
which they did timely as soon as they filed that. So, I mean, it's not a total bullshit argument.
Yeah.
And it probably is where his head was at,
mm-hmm.
you know, because like, you know, and last week, like we talked about it and you posted a tweet about it or an X, whatever the hell you call those yeah. things. I've said, I'll die on the hill if Alan Jackson actually, if his office paid that shit. Sounds like they paid that shit.
They paid that shit.
You know, so they paid yeah. that shit. I said, I'll die and I'll eat crow and I'll die on that hill. And I'm doing both.
Yeah, I have a nice crow here I actually cooked up for, you know. But no, yeah, I mean, that's the next point on this. The $23,000 payment, they paid it. And I'm just a layman here, and I'm watching the arguments trying to be made on this of, well, it came in the mail, and, well, we thought we should pay it. Like, who gets a $23,000 bill and just pays it without, like, when you weren't expecting it, and you're saying that they're all shocked by this bill, and they just, without question, okay, let's pay it. I mean, come on. I mean, you know what you're doing there. I would think that if you have a question or you're shocked by it, there'd be some sort of dialogue, not just let's write the check.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest thing with that is twofold.
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on what it was for, okay? Because there's nothing untoward about paying an expert for fees.
No.
But, you know, if you're hiring them.
So yes,
what
yes.
we know what the problem is here
yeah,
is
yeah.
that they weren't hired by the defense. They were hired, obviously, by the feds. The feds paid a portion of it. You know, and the thing that none of us have seen that's kind of like the overarching theme of this is that protective order was out there existing. None of us to sound off and all the people that are on Twitter and on socials, you know, constantly bickering with one another. We don't know what the language of that protective order is in terms of what they're supposed to do. So if the payment was made for travel and expenses, that's a non-issue. But the one thing that they had written on the invoice was trial prep.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it gets a little sticky. That's where it gets a little sticky, because at least from what I heard during that hearing, kind of the admonition from the feds was like, but you can't talk to them. You can't talk to them about what they did in terms of their testing, you know, because all of the things that what they were doing changed what the like that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like the testing was done. The report was done. None of the prep that came from ARCA to Alan Jackson. Not the other way around, because we had that wrong, too.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that script was coming from Jackson going to Wolf, and it was the other way around. Wolf had actually written the script up and sent it to Jackson,
okay,
which was a big deal. So in terms of that concept that some people are trying to throw out there, that the defense was trying to get them to tailor his opinion, that is not true. That's unequivocally not true. All the testing and the report, which both sides had, was done before either side knew that they existed at all as an entity that was investigating this case. So yeah. that's like in stone. Like that part of it, like at the end of the day, and I think that Alesi stated it, he's like, look, mistakes were made. You know, this is a hard case to try for a judge. It's a hard case to try for lawyers. Mistakes will be made. we certainly made mistakes, you know, but at the end of the day, you have to look, you have to give the mistakes the weight that they should be afforded, you know, and on the balancing side of this, you know, she's going to have to look at the, you know, the motion to dismiss that was recently filed. Now you can say, all right, well, that thing doesn't have legs or it does have legs, but either way, there's allegations contained in there. She's going to hear it all. I mean, this is just two sides that are absolutely at war. You know, I mean, this is a legal battle for the ages where you've got two sides that are just battling to the death. So, you know.
It's, I mean, and yeah, they're going to keep going. But I think with the scripted Q&A, a lot of people do have questions about and just how, you know, appropriate it was. Obviously, yes, you can work with your expert witnesses and prepare them and things like that. But to literally have like the questions and then in the margin, like, here's the answers or here's where I want you to go with it. And I get what you're saying. The findings and all that were done before any of this. But you're almost talking about kind of expressing these findings, you know, with omission to kind of lead the jury in a certain direction of where you want them to go. Again, from a witness that, for all intents and purposes, the judge and the jury think is impartial when they're not.
Independent.
So, independent, but
That's where that's where it lies.
Yeah.
That's where the entire issue lies with Judge Cannone. Is the representation by defense counsel that they were wholly independent. Because that was Brennan's argument. His argument was like, they're sitting here telling Your Honor, and more importantly, the jury, that they were wholly independent. But at the point that they started working with one another, and again, writing a script and sending it back like with questions that you're going to ask, there has never been an expert witness that we have hired that I haven't asked what questions should I ask.
Sure.
One of the reasons you hire the expert.
But that's when you hire them. And again, I mean, that's where the issue comes in. I have no issue with any of that. That's how it works.
But once they did the voir dire and they were on the witness list for the defense, I'm telling you, what the bigger issue for Judge Cannone is the fact that they represented to the jury that they were wholly independent.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna tell you this right now. I'm gonna throw Judge Cannone under the bus a little bit, because had she just allowed them, both sides, to say where these people came from, mm-hmm. none of this shit's taking place.
Sure.
If she had allowed the sides to say, okay, well, it was an independent investigation. These guys were hired by the federal government. That's it. Just disclose it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand why the need for that. Like I guess from, I mean, it is what it is, because both sides have to say, look, this was done not at our behest. Neither one of us. I know why the state doesn't want to have it in, because like, or have that said, because they came on the side of that John O'Keefe wasn't struck by a vehicle.
Sure.
So like, you know, and you've got a third party who's going to have a lot of gravitas with the jury, because it's the feds that hired him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but that problem really, like, if they're telling the jury who hired him, I'm telling you, we're not, as to that issue specifically, we're not where we're at right now.
Sure. If Jackson does get the boot here in the Karen Reed case, are we talking about like we're getting basically into appeal territory with Sixth Amendment issues even before this new trial begins?
100%. That's yes, absolutely. I don't think that there's any way that Alan Jackson is walking away quietly from this case. And, I think he will do whatever he has to do. So the ramifications will be massive. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll have the concept of lead counsel for the defense has been removed. The defense is immediately going to, I would assume, ask for a continuance, because they're going to need somebody to take his place. Now, whether or not that's Mark Bedereau or not, I mean, is yet to be determined. And, you know, I mean, like, obviously, Yannetti, Elisi, and Little know enough about the case to where Judge Bev may deny the, you know, the request for a continuance if they do ask for it.
Yeah.
you know, she'll say, look, you got three people on this team that know this case forward and backward. I'm not delaying anything. But here's what happens. If he files the appeal, it stays the trial anyway. Mm-hmm. So unless the appeal can get rushed through and done before the trial date, which is April 1, the thing's getting continued anyway. Because when you appeal, it's what they call stays it. It delays it. Mm-hmm. It holds it in place. So, it's a mess. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel very secure. I'm going to die on another hill. And I'm going to say that if he gets removed, that there's no way that he's not going to try to get back on the case.
Sure. Which then would eventually delay the case with a stay. And who knows when we'd be start back up. There's just so much with this. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, for Karen Reed, it actually plays out, it's seemingly okay on both sides, because if she is convicted, doesn't she have an ineffective counsel argument at the end on an appeal if she would need it with just this issue, these issues alone that have gone on?
I mean, probably not. Yeah, I mean, like everything that they're claiming that was done, wouldn't have affected what the jury thought at trial. You know what I'm saying? So like the jury's not going to care that a $23,000 bill was paid one way or another. It has nothing to do with the facts of the case. So which when you're talking about two different things. If you're talking about, oh, I'm going to file a complaint against Alan Jackson because he did all of this stuff, you know, and it cost me extra money. That's one thing. If you're talking about for the purposes of an appeal, if she gets convicted, is that going to really be an effective avenue in terms of kind of what the findings end up being? And if it's like, oh, well, you paid and you said you didn't pay.
Yeah. I mean, if that gets brought up into the trial in some way, shape or form, and then that affects the outcome of, you know, the jury's looking at them as well. They're kind of shady over here. Yeah, I mean, I would think that would be an argument. I think she has an argument both ways.
I've heard a couple of people say that, but I don't see what the basis for like intentionally casting shade on the defense for what happened in the first trial, how it makes it into a second trial. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, I've heard a couple of people, talking heads, talk about that. I'm like, I don't think that's a remedy here.
Yeah,
where the punishment should be that. Brennan gets to cast the shade on them for all the naughty things that they did the first time around with these witnesses. But, again, she's got other alternatives in terms of sanctions, could be financial sanctions. Obviously as to Alan Jackson, she could hit him with a hefty fine, mm-hmm. Where he's feeling it. And that could be a sanction because, I mean, she's just running up against kind of an immovable wall and a potential structural error at the appellate level if Reed is convicted.
Yeah.
If the findings aren't powerful enough to have knocked him out of the case, mm-hmm. Because it's really a lot of it's about perception.
Yeah.
It's a lot about candor to the court. Like Judge Bev just kind of feels like he wasn't forthright with her. And if his, like, especially in that little sidebar thing, I'm telling you, like, that was the thing. Cause like, you remember, she's like, oh, I remember it.
Yeah.
You know, when like he Elise's like, well, I have the transcript. She's like, oh, I remember it. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I'm sure you read it. She's like, no, I just remember it clear as bell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so like, to me, that was one of the things that she was really, that would really had her ire up.
Yeah.
The fact that Jackson had made the representation, because the timing of it, it was fine.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I would hope she gives the proper weight to the fact that Brennan misstated massively where that shit came from, because anybody that, and I don't care what side you're on, if you're being honest, when he's sitting there with the hide the ball shit, mm-hmm. accusing the defense of not sending it and that he had to get it through the feds, and if you're pretending like that didn't have an impact on the judge the moment that she heard it, you're full of shit.
Yeah, it was a big slip up in accuracy.
And he doubled and tripled down on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then came back later, like, by the way, I meant this.
Right. Exactly. Like,
okay. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. How do you think Karen Reed is feeling through all of this? Where do you think her head is at?
Not great.
Yeah.
It's nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
It's nerve-wracking. You know, I'm sure Jackson and the team are like, don't worry about it. It's going to work out. She'll never boot us because of the Sixth Amendment thing. But, you know, I've been in that position with Allison and us at Peril, and that it's very nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
And it's very nerve-wracking to the client. You know, like the concept of losing one or more of your team is horrifying. Sure. You know, could you imagine? I mean, for a multitude of reasons. One, because they've really fought very, very hard in this case. Mm-hmm. Whether you love them or you hate them, you cannot deny the fact that they have put in a massive amount of work on this trial. A sure. massive amount. Massive. I mean, like, this is legendary amounts of work type shit. That you have a bunch of lawyers doing. And, you know, so from that perspective of losing these particular lawyers, it would be devastating. The other part of it would be, you know, it could delay the proceedings, which just prolongs this thing for her one way or another.
Yeah.
You know, it's like at some point in a case like this, I think you just want to get to it.
Yeah.
You know, you get sick of all this bullshit. You're like, let's just get the trial done. Like, whether they're gonna acquit me or convict me, like I want to get to the next step of it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
It's not knowing.
Like, you know, even though she's out on bond, you know, I mean, if you're to believe what she said it herself. She's like, you know, like if they convict me, I'm gonna, you know, I'll go through the process. I prepared myself mentally for that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody realizes there is no, this isn't an open and shut case.
And in life.
I'm so tired of people acting like it is. Like,
it's not.
Often your buddy,
yeah,
like, just thinks this is so clear cut, and it's just not.
No, I agree. It is not clear cut, and it still could go either way. We could end up with another hung jury. There's so many places this could go, and this could go on for years and years and years still, depending on what we end up seeing. Just another twist and turn on an already very dramatic story.
Very curvy road.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.